A Pod Forte Podcast.
The next CMO podcast explores topics that are on the minds of forward-thinking marketing executives, from leadership and strategy to emerging technologies. And we bring these topics to life by interviewing leading experts in their fields. The Next CMO is sponsored by Planful for Marketing, a leading marketing performance management solution that automates marketing planning, financial management, and ROI optimization. And hosted by me, Peter Mahoney, an experienced CMO, CEO, board member, and executive advisor. In this episode of the Next CMO podcast, I speak to Khurram Malik, the CMO of Integral Ad Science. Integral Ad Science is a global leader in digital media quality. We talk about some fascinating research that Khurram and his team have done on attention when it comes to consumers viewing and interacting with ads. We talk about the future of generative AI on the advertising ecosystem and his advice for current and aspiring CMOs. I'm sure you'll enjoy the show. Hey, Khurram, thanks so much for being on the Next CMO podcast. Really excited to chat with you today. And maybe we can start with you telling us a little bit about Khurram. Give me the background.
Sure thing, Peter. Thanks for having me. Excited to speak with you and your audience and listeners. Yeah, I am the CMO at Integral Ad Science. I've been in mobile data and marketing for 20 plus years, having been both a product manager, product marketer, and even running a sales team to get to the point where I am now. And what I love doing is launching and growing technology products. And that's one of my kind of favorite things to do. Besides that, I'm a suffering University of Virginia fan. We always make it to the tournament and get bounced early, but I went there 3 times, so I can't get over that. And I'm happy to dive right into all forms of marketing. I just end with, I'm one of those marketers that is one of those B2B2C marketers, and I can touch on what that means, but basically our technologies help other marketers better connect with consumers.
Excellent. Well, it would be great to dive into a little bit more of your bona fides because they're significant here, Khurram. And so tell us a little bit about some of the roles that you had before Integral Ad Science. I know we'll talk about that in a second, but really will help us understand because you've got a fantastic background all around the advertising ecosystem.
Yep. So I'll touch on a couple things. I'll both touch on academic and then I'll go through the professional side for context. From an academic side, you know, I disappointed my parents, didn't go to med school, because a lot of my friends back in the day, many decades ago, were going to work at Anderson Consulting, now Accenture, making a good amount of money. And so I decided to forego medical school with basically a science degree. What I realized was I loved mobile, I loved marketing, I loved technology. And so I got a master's in information technology, which is basically a light computer science degree on the weekends. And then I got, a couple years later, a master's and MBA, focusing on finance, which sounds counterintuitive, but I could just see that marketing was going to be more quant and less art. So that's kind of the academic route. Now on the professional route, you know, I spent many years in strategy consulting with Accenture, but really one of the key portions of my formation was being a product manager at Microsoft and really getting to understand how engineering teams think about and build product and the role product plays in getting something out to market that solves a customer pain point. And then from that, I've spent time leading marketing at Comscore, which really, you know, a decade plus ago was a leading provider for digital measurement and media analytics. I've done some startup work with a company called Exalate and Compass. And then, you know, the platforms that many people have probably heard of is that I ran North America product marketing for Facebook's and now Meta's advertising business. At the time, it was $8 to $9 billion in ad revenue just on the direct response products. And then before I came to Integral Ad Science, I ran global business marketing for Spotify's ads business, which was about a $1.4-$1.5 billion business. But when I joined it, it was around $400 or $500 million. So I really, you know, I've seen what I call the behemoth companies. And I've seen what a small Israeli ad tech startup can do and everything in between. I feel like with IAS, I'm in a happy medium right now.
Well, it's fantastic. And I think your background is going to be really relevant to a lot of people based on the things that people are worried about these days, because there's a lot changing in this world that I think you can help illuminate for us a little bit along the way. But man, I have to say, I disappointed my parents too, on many levels, but I also did not go to med school. But it's funny, I have my degrees in physics and computer science. And so I went that way too, and actually almost went to Accenture right out of school. And it was, you know, there are two places I could go, and I chose it. I ended up going to IBM right out of school instead of Accenture, but that was the other path, and spent some time in the day. In fact, gosh, at ComScore, Russ Fradin, I don't know if you know Russ, was a colleague of mine back in the early days. So lots of interconnectedness in the world, as usually happens when you start to talk to people like you. So super excited about that. Now, just to do a little bit more table setting, just give us the high level nickel pitch of what IAS does to set some context.
Yeah, sure. So it is a technology company that really has a media measurement and optimization platform. And it provides marketers and publishers with data to drive results for them at its most basic. If I want to make it even more basic, it's a technology company that helps marketers understand what's working. That's the measurement side. And the optimization is what to do about it, specifically on digital media. And so our data is something that, you know, the industry uses to activate their digital media, measure their digital media, drive both sales and brand lift. The other thing that I just say is that, you know, we've been around a while, 10 plus years, and have just recently expanded all around the world. So excited to be here. And that's the nickel version.
Awesome. And public company, so at reasonable scale. So that's, and obviously with your background, that's not surprising that they tap someone like you for a great meaty role to be the CMO of a company like that. So that's exciting. And what's really interesting, by the way, just spending a beat here on your path to the CMO, which I think is interesting to a lot of our listeners, is one, you really touched on the financial side, which I think is incredibly important. And I think I separate the quant from the finance because it's really two very different things. But having this appreciation for, one, analytical thinking in general is critically important. And obviously in your world, it is everything that you do for your business anyway. But then the financial IQ is something that is not completely common across all CMOs. And I think it's going to become increasingly important to have strong financial IQ.
I want to share a story around that. Just to kind of, when I was at business school, I remember one of my favorite professors, there was a gentleman named Paul Ferris. Now, Paul is a CPG savant. And I remember he walked in the door and into the kind of introductory marketing class. And he said, I expect everyone here to know finance better than their bankers and be able to do marketing. Because if you don't, you'll be a marketer that will not be able to get capital allocation or to drive impact. And that stood with me. And that actually helped drive me to take more finance classes than marketing classes. Sounds odd, but it goes back to your point. And that's how Paul was even thinking about it back in the day.
Yeah, it's amazing. I think it's incredibly important. And I think CMOs have historically avoided financial accountability. And it's becoming, I think any active CMO is not avoiding financial accountability right now, but it's going to get worse and harder for them if they don't have just a strong, rigorous understanding of at least the financial principles behind their company and how sort of all the pipes work inside the money side of their business. Without understanding that, they've got a big issue. So God, we have so many places where we could go, but I did want to spend a minute on this research that you guys did that I spent some time going through that was really interesting. And let me foreshadow some things I want to talk about. How about if we do that? I want to talk about that because some really interesting stuff. And you did some research on basically the idea of attention or people actually paying attention and in interacting with ads. And what does that mean for the effectiveness and business impact of the ads? And then one of the things that I think is really topical right now that I'd love to hear your view on that we can get into after that is sort of how the whole world of generative AI is going to affect the learnings that you're seeing from this kind of report and in general, how new ad creative and optimization of ads is going to happen in the future. But let's start with maybe you can give us the high level view of the core thesis for the research that you all did recently.
Yeah, so I'll give the kind of overview on it. We can go a bit deeper. People can go to integralads.com and download the white paper called Taking Action on Attention. And
we'll put a link in the show notes, by the way, so people can find it easily. But yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, so I think before getting into the core thesis, I think it's important to just recognize, like, why are people caring about this thing called attention? And then I'll go into the core thesis. The reason why the term attention is getting a lot more attention is there are some macro trends in the marketing industry that are forcing marketers to look for other indicators of value and signal for value when they make their capital investments in media. So a couple things. Cookie deprecation, basically tracking mechanisms for media are going away. And a lot of that has to do with, of course, privacy first principles. There's content oversaturation. There's so much content out there. It's hard for marketers to find where to invest. Beyond that, there's tons of competition, there's creative copy. There's just, if you think about your day in a given day, the number of media channels that one engages with, it's just hard to cut through. So that's what's brought us to what is attention, which is, you know, answering the question, is a piece of content resonating with someone and are they taking a action as a result of it? And notice I said a piece of content. Now, we just happen to think about that piece of content in terms of an ad unit, but the learning could be applied to any piece of content, not just advertising. Now, within that, the core thesis is that attention is that index that can help inform whether a piece of content is capturing someone's cognition and driving some sort of action. And we believe that there are a couple of variables that matter, and those are visibility, situation of the ad unit or the content unit, and interaction. And so that's what the paper is about. It lays out why is attention important, what is attention, and what are the variables that are the composition of attention so that marketers can get smarter about where to make their media investments and why to capture attention.
So it's fascinating that you started with the idea of generically thinking about content, because I've been thinking about this a lot, that the idea of an ad has obviously evolved pretty significantly over time. So it used to be, you know, an image that was a static thing that you stick in front of, you fill a hole in a page with an image. That's what it was back in the day, obviously. And that's changed a lot over time in the ad format world. But even much broader than that, it's turned into ways that you interact with lots of different things. And one of the things I was curious about is, in your world of attention, have you been able to crack the understanding of how the idea of sort of embedded native kind of sponsorship that's really deeply embedded in the content, can you measure that? Right, because that is where you're starting to see things like influencers integrating in a very elegant way the concept. And so it's hard to tell where the ad begins and ends. Is that part of your work, or is that too hard to measure still?
Yeah, you know what? It's a great question. I'd say it's early days for that. We haven't gotten to that level yet. However, and it's not in the paper yet. However, we do have technology that does frame-by-frame analysis of video. In that frame-by-frame analysis of video, our technology has the ability to create metadata for the images that are going across the screen. Now, that metadata can include what are the brands you're seeing, what are the brands you're hearing, what is the sentiment of the video, what's happening in the video. I'll give you an example, though, of how that can work. You can example of, imagine watching a soccer match. And you can see the different brands that show up on the soccer match banners. So as a marketer, the technology, what that gives you is, what is this content? Is it safe? Who's investing in this content already? And then we can start to do analysis on is that content having impact on sales or impressions. So we're getting there, but we haven't released our research on it just yet. I'd be remiss to not call out a industry colleague of mine, Omar Tawakkol, that some of you may know, has just launched a company called Rembrand. It's early days for it, but I want to put a plug for them just because it's so cool. What they're basically doing is working with creators to inject a ad unit, imagine a soft food beverage injected into the feed of their content. And so it's early days for that, but we're certainly thinking through it. That's not been in the paper for the attention white paper that's coming now, but it'll probably be in the next version of it.
So when you look at that, so really interesting stuff. And I think the idea, and I'd love to geek out later at a different time. We don't have the time in this thing to talk about your analytics is really fascinating, because I think that's going to become increasingly important. And not only on the output and analytics side, but on the input and creation of those things, because that's where I think you're going to start to see the generative content stuff show up, is in really subtle ways where things are going to show up in influencing what seems to be organic media, the media that may not be so organic, which is going to be fascinating to watch. But of the three elements that you talk about, right? So it's visibility, situation, and interaction are the three things that you talk about. And, you know, one of them seemed to me that, well, yeah, if you interact with something, that's good, right? So if you stack them up next to each other, is one of them a stronger indicator, or is it really a complex, you know, ML-like cocktail of things that you can't really tell what it is that drives the outcome?
Well, great question. The short answer is it is like a cocktail, and it depends on the context and it depends on the format type. I want to break apart each one to kind of give the listeners who haven't read the paper so they get an understanding of the core components. And then I want to talk about some research that was done 15 plus years ago by ComScore that the listeners may find interesting. So like visibility very much is like, is the ad unit or the piece of content viewable? How long was it viewable? And was it in a full screen environment? Situations very much around ad density, meaning how many other pieces of content were around it, right? Where on the page was it? Is it brand suitable? Is it relevant to the content? And you see interaction is like, is there engagement with it? There's a fourth variable that feeds into interaction, which is eye tracking, which is the gaze. The problem with the gaze is that the gaze comes from a panel. It just doesn't scale, right? So you have to constantly balance signals with scale. And so the short answer to your question is, it's the interaction. Yes, it matters. It can be a leading indicator, but we have a ton of research that shows, and the paper shows this, that even visibility unto its own has a big impact. But now that brands are asking for visibility is not enough, we need to make sure that it's in a brand suitable environment should also be a variable. Those two together, probably even more than interaction, often are indicators, because sometimes you can get a false indicator on interaction where it's like, I'm hitting play or pause and I have to shut the video off. Now, the other thing I'd share is there's a really interesting paper that's, I think it's 10, 15 years old by now, called Natural Born Clickers. I don't know, Peter, have you read that paper or do you know of it?
No, I've seen it. I have not read it. Yeah.
So it's a very interesting thesis, right? So the hypothesis for internet behavior back in the day was clicks equal engagement and therefore equal value. And what ComScore showed through the research was actually there's a preponderance of people that interact inordinately with ads and internet content that drive a majority of the clicks, because the clicks are a false proxy for true engagement. And so I think that still resonates. And that's why we believe like interaction is one of them, but the other ones are also quite important.
So was Russ Fradin involved in that research, by the way? He had to be. Because
if you ask Russ, he'll know it.
Yes, I'll tell you that I think the statute of limitation is over and I can disclose some of this. But back in the late 1990s, I was at a company called Engage that was part of the CMGI network of companies. Mm-hmm. We bought a company called the Flycast Network, or Flycast. And that's where Russ came from, I think, is where he was. And their whole model was that they had this optimization technology that basically they'd run a bunch of ads and see which ads got a response. And a response back then was a click. That was really the only thing that you could measure. And then basically they would, it was very simplistic. What they did is they take a list of the sites that drove highest clicks and delete everything below a certain level. Mm-hmm. So that would give you a boost in an optimization. That back in the day was the way optimization happened. Now, what they figured out at some point was that there was some Southeast Asian country where all the traffic was going because they all clicked. And it was a cultural thing at the time, but it was this bias built in, and it was a geographic and cultural bias that was basically an amplification of this generic model that seems to work. But it's really fascinating. The other thing that people may not understand, and it's, I can't remember if it's explicit or just implied in your research, Quorum, is the idea, it's like if a tree falls in the forest, does anyone hear it? If an ad is shown below the fold in the page, does anyone see it? And for people not that close to the world, I don't know how much of a problem it is anymore, but it historically has been a problem for some publishers, especially where advertisers get charged for ad units that are never, ever seen by a human being. And that's one of the factors in here. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah. I mean, our core measurement solution looks at whether an ad was viewable, was it in the right geography, and was it human traffic, and we kind of splice out non-human traffic. And so we're one of the good guys, and we're here to help as a third party marketing investors get the right fraud-free experience for their advertising. And we also partner with publishers to show them where the traffic could be coming that is fraudulent, right? And so I think about that as like elevating the internet experience a bit. And we play a role in it. We're not the only company playing there, but that for us is where we started. And the thing that I'd say is that what's next that's coming that folks that are on the call should be really paying attention to, pun intended, is connected TVs. And so connected TVs are, if you take your mobile phone, turn it sideways and expand it to 70 inches and put it on the wall, they're a connected platform that is getting a tremendous amount of people's eyes, ears, and also eventually advertising dollars. And it's a great way to invest and connect with audiences. But the similar experience that we went through with display and video is now taking root within the connected TV experience. Anyway, the point being that it's back to the future with CTV, and we're spending a lot of time thinking about attention, not just on mobile devices, not just on PCs, but on connected TVs as well.
Yeah, I should put in a plug for, we actually interviewed on the show back probably 4 or 5 months ago, Dan something or other, who was the head of product at Roku. Yeah. So in fact, I think he was involved with my friend Baker, is the guy who was the CEO of DataXu, which was okay. The technology that was sold to Roku to become part of their world. But yeah, it's a fascinating thing because there are lots of complexities. And as I thought where you were going to go, Quorum, is that the idea that not only do you have actually the native TV thing, but you've got the mobile thing. Someone's got a tablet and they're actually mirroring their tablet on their TV through the TV device or an over-the-top device or something. So it gets really complicated. And in some cases, you actually want to know if someone is, if it's a group viewing thing for, for the content that you may serve in the right environment. So I've got to control myself in this discussion because I get too excited about it. But I did want to make sure we touched a little bit on, if you put your Nostradamus hat on, I'd love to hear your perspective on, 2-3 years from now, what role do you think this whole generative AI stuff is going to have in this world? I can see it impacting many places, but sure. What are the things that you're most focused on right now?
Yeah. So I'll put my Nostradamus hat on, and I always want to break apart the industry into kind of two big buckets. I think on the supply side and on the creator side, I think generative AI could play a massive role in not only either creating content, but also complementing content. And so I think the creators, both enterprise creators, like the biggest in the world, like a Disney, or the creators of one are going to need to figure out how can AI complement the story that I'm trying to tell here, whether it's through visualization, through graphics, through text, or how am I going to compete with someone that's just pushing that out. So I think on the supply side, you're going to see there's going to be an opportunity for much more content at scale to come to compete for people's attention. Now, the problem that comes with that is going to be verification of the content. And like, what is this truly coming from this person? Is this person who they say they are, right? There's a huge set of things to think through. Now, on the advertiser side, I think a lot of the generative AI work, this is that I believe the, I don't want to say dirty little secret, but like AI work is already happening on the demand side. And what I mean there, beyond using AI and generative AI to create content for messages, for advertising, for advertisers, both on the tech side or video, AI is being used by platforms today to do propensity models, to do lookalike models, to automatically optimize for conversions. And this has been going on for 4 or 5 years. Now, it doesn't have the sexy title of generative AI. It has conversion optimization. So my what I'd say outside of the creative side on the demand side, I expect the optimization models for media buying to get stronger and the creative to get more tasty and more personalized. So it's a fun time. And, you know, we want to play a part in helping people still answer those core questions. What's working for me and what do I do about it?
Oh, that's great. And it's interesting you brought up the idea of personalization, because I think personalization is clearly an opportunity for this. If you can get into sort of the audience of one kind of personalization with some of these systems in real time and say, hey, Quorum, here's an ad for you or whatever the version of that is.
What I'd say, though, yeah, just to build on that, though, Peter, I think what's happening, though, the arc of content and media was very high on the personalization side. I'd say 2017 through 19 or 15 through 19 or even 13. But now we're moving towards highly contextualized. So I put it a different way. It's like making sure that the context that's provided to an audience is formed in such a way that they're consuming things that they enjoy, because the one-to-one is going to be harder to do. And so there's that nuance. But I agree with the sentiment.
Yeah, so it's really contextualization versus personalization is where you're going to see it, as you're saying. Yeah, very interesting. And you can see that there'd be some fascinating applications of that if you have some ability to really understand and read the context for in relative real time for where the creative is being rendered. That's and right. Then adjust that in real time to make it, like you said, it's more relevant. It's going to feel more natural and fit in. And I think the interesting thing is there's going to be this comparison between deeply integrated and feels natural, so that much that it may fade into the background, and something that is just brash and out there and not right. contextual will stand out. And I'm sure that people like you guys at IAS are going to figure out how to measure the difference between those things and
that's
optimize
right.
it.
We aspire to do that. That's right.
Yeah. Well, that's great. Well, believe it or not, we're almost at the end of our time. And it always goes so quickly for me anyway. And Quorum is saying, thank God, I thought this was never going to end. But the one question that I want to make sure we ask, that we ask everyone, Quorum, is what advice would you give to current or aspiring CMOs?
Yeah. So many ways you can go with that. There are two pieces of advice. One is like you have to be relentlessly curious and constantly learning, especially in the marketing space. There is more innovation and variables in marketing than a lot of other functions and disciplines. And I know my CFO friends don't want to hear that, but it's true. So stay relentless. But the other one is synthetic thinking is more important now than ever before. Everybody thinks about analytic thinking and breaking apart problems and doing like a discrete analysis. But as a marketing leader, you have to really do great synthetic thinking and turn that into stories that people understand. And I think that those marketers that can do analytic thinking, but then turn that into synthesis and write, never has been the power of writing well been more important, because as the world gets more complicated and there's more data points, et cetera, writing a good story, synthetic thinking is just crucial. And I think CMOs are looked to do that for a lot of companies.
So you're saying along with your science degree and your finance degree, you also need a good liberal arts education.
I'm telling you, writing is the new black.
It is, absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Khurram, for being on the podcast. Really excited to have you join the next CMO. And we'll make sure we add links to the resources that we talked about, including a way to get your hands on the research that IS did around attention, which is really interesting stuff. So I recommend it. And make sure you all follow the next CMO in Plan Full on Twitter and LinkedIn and all those places where you might follow us. And if you have ideas for topics or guests, you can email us at thenextcmo@planful.com. So thanks for joining me again.
Thank you for having me, Peter.
Pod Forte Podcast.